His mouth was horribly humanesque, despite the eye placement, until he smiled and displayed teeth, sharp and wedge-shaped, in double rows like a shark's. He opened his four-fingered, thumbless hands and dropped from maybe 30 feet up. It was tough to judge from that distance, binoculars or no. I couldn't see him land. The inconveniently placed center cement barricade hid my view, but I could feel the impact on the ground under my feet from half a mile away. I heard it, too, and saw the bridge shudder. I handed back the binoculars. It hadn't landed on any of the wolves, I told myself. The pack sense would have told me if someone had died.
"What's a troll?" Tony asked as he took the binoculars, then made an impatient sound. "I know what it is in the stories, three billy goats gruff and all of that, but how do you stop it? Our guns didn't seem to do much more than tick it off while we were trying to get the civilians to safety."
"They're tough," I told Tony. "Usually more brawn than brains, though they can talk, or most of them can. A troll's skin is supposed to be very thick. The book I read about it compared it to a suit of armor, for whatever that's worth. It must be tougher than most medieval armor if your guns didn't hurt him." I tried to remember everything I could. "He'll be equally comfortable on land or the river. You should warn your guys in the boats." There were a number of boats gathering on either side of the bridge, more now than there had been 5 minutes ago. I judged that most of them were gawkers, but I thought I saw a couple of official boats, too.
"Any idea how we can kill it?"
"Back in the day, people used to hunt them with lances," I told him apologetically. Tony gave me an unamused laugh.
"Mercy, we're all that stands between the citizens and that thing when it comes down off the bridge. I don't have any mounted knights down here."
"J.C. has a horse," the guy with the bloody sleeve said.
"Yeah,"
said another guy absently. Like Tony and a few others, he had a pair of binoculars. He was staring through them as he spoke, but his lance is too small.
"You'd know about small lances,"
said still another guy. This one apparently was J.C., because he continued,
"But my horse is afraid of sheep and small children. I don't think I could get him within a mile of a troll, and no one's lance is that big."
"How many people do you have injured?" I asked Tony quietly as the other police officers worked off stress and fear by exchanging rude and inappropriate comments. Tony shrugged.
"We got the civilians off on our side. Pasco got them off on theirs. Some idiot tried to protect his car and got thrown into the river. Sheriff's patrol on the river says he hit wrong and broke his neck. We lost one of our guys who was distracting the troll from a car while Pasco officers cleared the passengers out."
"Ate him," said Willis grimly, though he kept his voice down so he was talking just to Tony and me.
"I've known that man for 10 years. Lousy cop. He was lazy and good at making sure that someone else took the call. He stepped up today, though. No kids, no wife."
He shuddered.
"No body."
"Willis," said a muffled voice. I turned my head to see Willis put his hand to his ear and hold the earpiece tighter.
"Yes?" "You see that gray van? West side of the bridge, Kennewick-bound lane, stopped just over the arc toward you. The one with the caved inside?"
"I see it."
"There's someone in that van. The left side smashed, but the right side door slid open a minute ago. Looks like one of the werewolves, one of the first two, might have opened the door. The one who has been turning into a werewolf."
That would be Zack, I thought. There was a pause.
"I can see him again. There's still someone else in the van, a woman. They aren't coming out."
"Shit," he said.
"Oh, damn, there's a car seat. They're trying to get a baby out of the car seat, but they're having trouble. There's something wrong with the woman, and the wolf isn't equipped to deal with a car seat."
Willis stiffened.
"We'll get someone over there."
In my mind's eye, I thought about what would happen to a police officer. A dozen police officers who tried running in front of the troll to get to the car. The troll had eaten one of them already. Adam and the wolves would do their best, but humans were too slow. I wasn't slow. I promised Adam I wouldn't be stupid, but there was a car seat and a baby. I considered what might be the problem that Zack hadn't been able to get them out of the van. Baby seats attached to the car with seat belts. Babies produced a lot of sticky substances that could make buckles tough to open, and the belts were strong. Werewolf jaws do fine with rending and ripping, but they might have trouble with seatbelts attached to fragile babies. I felt my pockets to make sure, but the only thing I had in my pocket was the essential oil bottle Zack had stuffed there. My concealed carry gun was in its holster in the small of my back, but that wouldn't be much use if I had to cut a seatbelt. "Hey, Tony," I said casually, "do you have a knife I can borrow?" Tony was talking to one of the officers about something else. He didn't even ask me what I needed it for, just handed me a sleek black pocket knife. I took it and slipped it into my pocket, where pocket knives go, right? I had watched the troll. He had moved fast, but not as fast as the werewolves could, because he had tried to drop on them and failed. If the werewolves could outrun him, so could I. I was pretty sure I could outrun him. Willis briefed everyone on the new problem because they were human and couldn't overhear the Bluetooth earphone. As he talked to his people, I considered my actions carefully because I'd made a promise to Adam. I could outrun that troll if I had to. Better than that baby trapped in the van could outrun it. Better than any of the officers who already had casualties. I had to be able to look at myself in the mirror. If I stayed safe when I might have saved someone else, especially a baby, that would poison what was between Adam and me. "I'll do it," I said. "I'm faster than you guys are." Tony's hand clamped on my arm. "Civilian," he snapped. I looked at him. "You know what I am," I said dryly, because he did. I'd kept what I was secret for most of my life. But being Adam's wife, belonging to the pack, that looked like it meant that a lot of my secrets were going to come out. Being Adam's wife meant that being a coyote shifter wasn't going to make me any more of a target than I already was. The other officers were paying attention while trying to pretend they weren't. We'd been clear with the news media that I wasn't a werewolf. I gave Tony a smile. "You've seen me run." And so the police would know we hadn't lied to them outright. "I'm not a werewolf, but I'm faster than any mundane person." He didn't smile back.
"Maybe so. Are you faster than that thing?"
A howl echoed from the bridge, and I saw the gathered police officers come to alert, their hands sliding to weapons and their muscles tensing. I understood the instinct. The distinctive howl was as much a weapon of the Tibisena as the volcanic heat under his skin. He hadn't loosed the full power of his cry. But despite that, despite the distance between us, the howl sent an atavistic icy finger of fear up my spine, only partially alleviated by my understanding that it was just magic. "It looks like we're going to find out. Besides, our Tibisena," who had been lion-sized, half-formed and growing the last time I'd seen him, "won't forget I'm an ally. I'm not sure he'd make the same association with a stranger." I didn't know how much of Howell had stayed in charge when he took full Tibisena form. Howell said it was hit and miss. So far, the Tibisena had been friendly, more or less, to anyone in the pack.
"No," Tony said.
"No," snapped Willis. "Not your call to make," I told them. Then I twisted, using my shoulder and opposite hand to break Tony's grip, and slipped by his attempt to regain a hold. As soon as I was free, I bolted for the bridge. My ears told me no one had taken more than a couple of steps to stop me, but at the end of the bridge I glanced over my shoulder to make sure. Then I dropped to a walk. Running would attract the troll's attention if it looked this way. The bridge had four lanes with a central divider. On the outer edge of the outside lane was a guardrail, a sidewalk, and a waist-high banister-style galvanized fence designed to keep people from leaping off into the river. There was a sign, too, that announced there was a $250 fine for jumping from the bridge. The outer coat of galvanization on the metal railings had begun to peel under the effects of the sun and wind, but it didn't look trashy yet. I gripped the top of the rail and walked steadily up the bridge. I looked at the ground, the sky, the water below. Dark blue because the wind was blowing in a storm. I even looked at the men crouching on top of the island hotel. I didn't look for the troll. Some things can fuel you watching them. If I made it to the van without attracting attention, it would be a very good thing. Ahead of me, I could hear the sound of metal crunching and glass breaking. I could hear Adam growling and the sound of Daryl's voice, though I couldn't tell what he was saying. Whatever they were doing it on the far side of the bridge. I made it safely to the first car, the upside-down red Buick. There was blood on the broken glass of the driver's side door. It wasn't enough to have been life-threatening, but people die from things other than blood loss when their car has rolled. Tony and Willis had only described two deaths, so the occupants of this car were probably going to be okay. I clutched that reassurance to myself and kept walking. As I passed the Buick, I got a whiff of the troll for the first time. It smelled like water fay magic and a bit like pepper, something sharp that made my eyes want to water, but didn't smell unpleasant, at least not to me. I took two steps beyond the upended Buick and stopped as the pack hunting song abruptly and unexpectedly flooded through me, connecting me to those of the pack who were on the bridge. When I'd become one of the pack, I'd learned pretty quickly that there were some downsides. I'd had to learn to shield parts of my mind to keep the pack from influencing my actions. But there were some upsides, too. My favorite was the hunting song. When the hunt was on, we connected. Like a Broadway dance company who had performed together for years, we knew what each member of the hunt would do almost before they moved. It didn't happen every hunt, just on the ones where the outcome of the hunt was important. It wasn't a matter of Adams controlling us all. That would have been creepy and absolutely unacceptable. It was a linkage of purpose that allowed us to meld our movements, and it felt like belonging. When the song of the hunt sang through the pack bonds, it was the only time I ever felt as though I really was a part of something bigger than myself, that my presence in the pack wasn't an unhappy fluke. Admittedly, the pack had been a lot better lately. It was me who was holding grudges now, I thought. I knew it wasn't useful, but it didn't matter. The pack was finally willing to welcome me. Well, mostly they were. I just wasn't sure I wanted to accept. But the hunting song only cared that I was part of the pack out risking life and limb together. Between one step and the next, I knew that Adam didn't like the taste of troll blood, that his hip was bleeding, but it wasn't serious. I knew that Daryl's shoulder was bruised, restricting the use of his left hand, and that he was sweating with the effort of not changing. Zack was frantic. He had no way to get the baby out of the car, and the woman's fear was making it hard to control his wolf. Submissive or not, a werewolf was a predator, and his wolf liked the scent of her blood and terror. Even the baby wouldn't be safe if he lost control. He didn't know if he could live with a child's blood on his hands. Adam wasn't troubled by Zack's fears. I could feel his confidence that Zack would figure out how to rescue the human woman and her child without harming them. And so could Zack. The submissive wolf drew on Adam's belief and used it to control his wolf. I knew that the troll had lost track of the wolves because they had let him become distracted. He found a shiny blue car and was smacking it into the guardrail over and over as if he enjoyed the noise it made. Adam slunk unheeded along the bridge on the other side of the battered cement barrier from the troll. The barrier hadn't looked like that last time I'd driven over the bridge, so the troll must have played smash the car with that barricade, too. But it was sufficient to keep Adam out of sight as he worked to get in position to push the troll in Hoel's direction. The hunting song told me that while the werewolves hadn't been able to harm the troll much, Hoel had been a little more successful, and the troll had quit letting the Tibisena close with him. So they decided to force the troll into a confrontation with Hoel, more to see exactly where the troll's weaknesses were than because they expected Hoel to be able to finish him off quickly. Daryl, crouched low, threaded through the battered cars, heading to a position where he would complement Adam's attack. They'd be two sides of the funnel, with Hoel at the narrow end. Daryl had acquired a tire iron and carried it in his good hand. Hoel was a foggy presence in the hunting party. His actions were clear, but everything else was murky and hot rage-coated. The rage was unfocused, but I could feel the fury of it building. He let out a roaring cough that sounded more like a lion's hunting cry than anything canine, but he refrained from making the spine-chilling cry that might drive the troll away from him. I took that as a sign that he was cooperating with Adam's planning. All of this information I received between one breath and the next. At that point, they all realized I was there, too. From Adam came a flash of betrayal. I had promised to keep safe. That faded as he understood that I was there because of the baby, that I could help Zack. A pause. Acceptance. He knew about protecting the weak. I knew that he, Daryl, and Hoel would do their best to keep the attention of the troll away from the van with the fragile humans trapped inside. Zack and I were to get the people to safety. Zack was very relieved. More relieved, I thought, than was really justified. I hoped I could help. I hoped not to be just another civilian to protect. I was nearly to the van, noting almost absently that it had been manufactured in the same era as most of the VW bugs I kept running. It had been lovingly restored to a high polish not very long ago. The front end was crunched, though whatever it had hit was gone. Maybe it had been the troll himself. Antifreeze from the van's radiator ran down the bridge in narrowing rivulets. I could feel Zack's presence on the left side of the van. But it was the right side that had working doors, so I decided to leave it to him to keep an eye out for the troll while I took a look inside the van. I started around the van, but stopped. I trusted Zack, but I snuck around the front of the van and looked for the troll anyway. I found him in the Pasco-bound lane, the far side of the bridge, smashing the shiny blue Nissan into the metal rails. I caught a glimpse of a white sheet of paper on the rear window with a date written in black Sharpie. The Nissan had been someone's new purchase. I hoped their insurance would cover trolls. Smashing was maybe the wrong word to use for what the troll was doing, I decided, though metal, glass, and fiberglass were getting crumpled. Smashing implied that the troll was beating the car into the rails. The troll's actions were more playful than that. He pushed the car forward, then let go as it rolled with some force into the rails. Bits of car broke off in the impact, then it rolled back into his hands. It was either in neutral, or he'd destroyed the transmission in some interesting fashion I'd never encountered before. After a particularly hard impact, the front window shattered. The troll bounced around in excitement. The bridge moved under my feet. And then he propelled the Nissan with even more force than before. The car sped into the rail. The rail bent, and the little blue car got stuck. Mood abruptly altered. The troll tossed his head back and let out an ear-piercing scream of rage. He grabbed the car in both hands, shoved it through the guardrail and the railing on the far side, and over the edge of the bridge. Hooting in triumph, the troll jumped up and grabbed one of the bridge cables and climbed up it so he could watch the car in the river. I tried not to reflect on the strength it would take to force a car through both sets of rails designed to prevent just that, as I took a chance while it was distracted and moved back to the front of the van with slow caution so no sudden movement of mine would attract the troll's attention. Then I sprinted to the passenger side of the van. The sliding door was open and bent, so it would never slide open or shut again. From the marks, I was pretty sure that Daryl had opened it, or maybe Zack, before he was Holy Wolf. Zack stood beside the open door, looked at me, then rounded the back of the van again to resume his observation of the troll. I felt him settle into a guard position on the driver's side of the van. If the troll made a move toward us, he'd warn me and do his best to keep us safe. The car seat was nearest the door. On the other side of it, a woman held a bottle to the baby's mouth, keeping the baby happy and quiet. Smart woman. "Hey," I whispered. She was not much older than Jessie. One of her arms was obviously broken just above the elbow, and she held it against her side. "I'm here to help," I told her. I was being quiet. The troll was making more noise than World War III, but that didn't mean he couldn't hear us.
"I can't get my baby out," she said.
She took her cue from me and kept her voice down, but it vibrated with desperation.
The seatbelt jammed, and the bottle is almost empty. When it's gone, she's going to start crying.
The baby was not very old, swaddled in a pink blanket and set backward in the seat. She was still in that plastic stage where her mouth and nose looked like every other baby's mouth and nose, instead of the person she would someday become. Her eyes were wide and blue and focused on her mom as she sucked. I took a good look at the car seat. It wasn't one of the ones that the bucket holding the baby just popped out. I didn't know a lot about baby seats, but it looked to me as if it were an older model and something had jammed the latch, something with a big fang. The button was pressed in, but the catch hadn't released. I pulled out Tony's knife and started working on the tough webbing of the seatbelt. The knife looked good, but the blade was as dull as a bad skin cleanser commercial. "When we get out of this," I said very quietly, "remind me to give Tony a whetstone and a book on how to use one."
"Who is Tony?"
she asked. "The police officer whose knife I borrowed," I told her. The stubborn belt parted at last, and I pulled the seat free. I took a step back, and that's when I saw that the arm wasn't the only injury the woman had. Her knee was swollen to twice its normal size. "Can you walk on that leg?" I asked. She bit her lip and shook her head.
"But you can get Nicole out," she said. "Get her out, and I'll be okay. I told the werewolf that."
The baby made a noise. It was only a little noise, more of a squeak than a cry. But there were a lot of creatures on the bridge with very good hearing. The wolves had been letting the troll entertain himself. But the blue car, by now surely sunk under the river, wasn't interesting anymore. The pack hunting song told me that the little noise of something helpless, of a helpless human baby, had attracted the troll's attention. There was a thump, and the van rocked a little when the troll landed back onto the bridge from his perch among the cables. I could feel the troll's regard, but he couldn't see me. I rocked the baby seat a little, and the baby settled. We were all very still, until the troll started banging on another car. I had to get them both out, and I couldn't carry the mother. But we had wheels. The radiator fluid I'd seen told me that it was unlikely we could get the engine going, but we were on a downhill slope, and both Zack and I could push. All I had to do was get the van moving. I put the baby, car seat and all, back next to her mother, who put the mostly empty bottle back in the baby's mouth. She, the baby, smiled, kicked both feet, and resumed sucking. That made a noise, too, a small, whistly, sucky noise that made the troll grunt in satisfaction. I don't know if it was my instincts, the pack hunting sense, or the sudden lack of smashing sounds, but, with the hairs on the back of my neck, I felt the troll start toward us at a slow, hunter's pace. The Fae are attracted to children. Someone, I think it was Bran, told me that children held power because they were in the process of becoming something. In that promise, there was magic, and it was like catnip to the Fae. In the past, some of the Fae craved children as pets, leaving something in their place because magic required balance, and that I'd learned from Ariana's book. Some of the Fae simply ate them. A baby was on the cusp of becoming. The troll's near-silent approach was filled with an intensity, a lust I could scent. And then the pack-hunting song exploded with information. Adam leaped over the barrier, and Howell bolted from around the car he'd been hiding behind. But Daryl, who'd been a few steps closer, reached the troll first. He struck at the side of the troll's knee with a narrow pry bar end of the tire iron. The troll slapped the iron away and knocked Daryl over in the process. Either the touch of iron or the force Daryl had swung it with hurt the troll, who stopped to shake his hand. That gave Daryl a second chance for attack. He took a running leap onto the troll, and without slowing down, climbed up on its side, making it all the way to the troll's shoulders. Zack stayed where he was, between the van and the troll, the last barrier. I could feel his determination to slow the creature down so that I could get the human and her child to safety. Recalled to my task, I scrambled to the front seat, taking a quick glance out the window while I did. The troll was still on the opposite side of the barrier, so I couldn't see Adam or Hoel, but I had a good clear view of the troll reaching behind himself. His shoulder joint was built differently from any ape or monkey I'd seen, because he had no trouble reaching behind his neck and grabbing Daryl in both hands and throwing him off over the railing. When Daryl disappeared from the pack hunting song, I told myself fiercely that it was only that he was too far away. Werewolves don't swim, but there were a lot of boats down there. A lot of boats, and some of them knew that the werewolves were trying to help. His abrupt absence hurt, and I couldn't see past the hurt to tell if he was just gone from the hunting song, or if he'd disappeared from the pack as well. Zack broke away from the van, running to help the other two keep the troll away. Daryl doesn't have to be dead, I told myself fiercely as my butt hit the front seat of the van. His sudden disappearance from my awareness was traumatic, and I couldn't reach the subtler pack sense. Couldn't tell if the wave of loss I felt was only from the hunt, or if it was his death echoing through me. I put my foot on the clutch.
It won't start, the woman behind me said. My sister, she tried and tried. I told her to get out, that I was right behind her, and she ran. She figured it out, but by then the police had her.
Shh, it's okay. I tried to put it into neutral, but the linkage was stuck. It would still roll with the clutch in, but I'd have to push the van and hold the clutch at the same time. I tried to open the door, and it wouldn't open. I remembered the huge crease that something had put down the driver's side of the van. All the werewolves were fighting for their lives, but the hunting song touched them all. I couldn't block it. They knew I was in trouble, and one of them came to help. Two wolves against the troll weren't enough. But Adam was the heart of the song, its director, if not its dictator, and he directed Hoel to come help me. He picked Hoel because Hoel could best protect me if he and Zack failed to hold the troll back. Out loud, because he was ignoring me otherwise, I said, "No, Adam, I'll figure out something." Hoel came anyway. I could see him in the rearview mirror. Hoel looked a little different every time he took on the Tibisena form. It was a subject of much discussion in the pack. Zack said he thought it might be because the Tibisena is a creature of the volcano, and lava doesn't have a hardened shape. That was my favorite explanation. This time, fully formed and mostly solid, he looked a little like a Fu lion, his muzzle broad and almost cat-like, with a mane of dreadlocks that crackled and hissed as they moved, breaking the outer black shell, and displaying liquid orange glowing lava that cooled rapidly to black again as some other part broke open. The effect was a shimmering, flashing black and orange fringe about 6 inches long. His body had thickened, and his legs lengthened, front more than the rear, so his back had a German Shepherd slant. His tail lashed back and forth, more like a cat's than a dog's, and the end of his tail was covered with the same lava-light-enhanced dreads that his neck wore. He put his shoulder against the van, and the battered metal smoked, and we both felt it when Adam staggered under a blow that shattered his shoulder. Zack was there with Adam, but we all knew, the hunt sense knew, that he was not the partner that Hoel was. We felt his frantic efforts to distract the troll from Adam, who had fallen. Hoel heaved, and the van started rolling, and Hoel ran back to the battle. The van moved sluggishly around the SUV, but when I got the wheels straight, it traveled better. By the time we reached the bottom of the bridge, we had achieved a pace that made weaving through the dead vehicles interesting, because I had to keep the nose of the van pointed downhill. I passed the last car, the red Buick, and I lost the song of the hunt. The loss was unbearable, leaving me raw and frantic, because the loss fried some circuit in my brain. I could feel the pack bond, feel the mating bond between Adam and me, but it told me nothing other than that Adam and the pack were there. I stayed the course until the van coasted past the police barricade, which they had moved so I could get the van through. As soon as I stopped the van, police and EMTs swarmed around it. The woman and her baby as safe as I could get them, I abandoned them to run back up the bridge. What I expected to do to something the werewolves weren't able to stop, I didn't know. I only knew that Adam was hurt, and I wasn't there to make him safe. 3. As I ran, this time unworried about attracting the troll's attention, my view was blocked by cars and the cement divider, so the fey monster was the only one I could see. I pulled my SIG out of its concealed carry holster in the small of my back. The SIG Sauer had been a birthday present for my mother. It was a 40, larger caliber than the 9mm I used to carry. I still practiced with the 9mm and the 44 revolver, but the 40 was a subcompact, and it was easier to conceal. It was still small enough caliber that I could fire it and not fatigue until I'd emptied 4 or 5 magazines. With the 45, I got 5 shots before my aim got wobbly. I wished I'd been carrying the 45, though from what the police had said, the gun was unlikely to be useful. But I didn't have a rocket launcher handy. The troll picked up a Miata in both hands. The shiny green of the car was the same tint as the troll, but much darker. Miatas are small, but they still weigh more than 2,000 pounds. That troll brought it up over his head and held it there for a second or two. Then he brought it down and smashed it on the ground. I couldn't see, my vision blocked by the cars and the center barricade, though the crash of metal and glass told me when it hit. The troll staggered suddenly. I growled under my breath in frustration because I couldn't tell what had happened. Whatever had caused the troll to stagger hadn't made him lose his grip on the little car, now much more compact. He cried out and smashed the Miata down again, faster than before, like a housewife smashing a spider with her shoe. Hoel howled, and this time it was the real thing, full-throated and powerful with the magic of the volcano that had birthed the Tibisena. I stumbled, falling down on one hand and knees. My other hand still held the gun. My heart pounded in my ears as a resultant wave of fear crashed through me. Even though I knew it was only magic, it was hard for me to stand up and move toward him when fear slid through me and told me to run. But Adam was hurt. I couldn't run away when Adam was ahead of me. The troll, who was not familiar with the effect of the Tibisena's cry, had a much stronger reaction. He dropped the car and bolted, batting a truck that stood in his way so hard that it tipped over. For the first 2 strides he was in a blind panic, and then his eyes met mine. I stopped moving, hoping that he'd stay on his side of the road, that the panic caused by the Tibisena would keep him going. I hoped very hard, because my biggest magic superpower was changing into a coyote who would have even less of a chance against a troll than I did in human form. I'd come to help, because I couldn't stay on the sidelines with Adam wounded, but I was under no illusions that I was a match for the troll. Though I was past the place where the pack hunting song had kicked in on my first trip, it had not returned. Maybe there were too few of the pack members still whole enough for a hunt. I didn't know. Couldn't tell because the pack bonds told me nothing. I felt very alone, standing in the middle of the road with the troll's intent gaze locked onto me. He bounded over the cement barrier like a dinosaur-sized track star, leaving dents in the pavement where he landed. But Adam jumped the barrier just behind him. He was battered and bloody, running on 3 legs, and even a werewolf looked small next to the troll. But the front leg Adam had tucked up didn't seem to slow him in the slightest, and Adam brought with him an indomitable determination that made apparent inequality between the troll and the wounded werewolf meaningless. If I died today, or 100 years from now, I would keep the image of him hunting down that troll in my heart. They both, troll and wolf, covered the quarter of a mile in a time that would have won an Olympic sprint. But for some reason, it seemed to take hours as I stood waiting. I suppose I could have turned and tried to outrun the troll. I might even have managed it. But I was horribly aware of the humans behind me who had no defense against a fey like the troll. Maybe it would continue to follow me as I ran past them, assuming I did manage to outrun it. But what if it stopped and attacked the humans instead? I knew some of those police officers. If they saw it chasing me, they would shoot at it. If they heard it, it would go after them. And then there were all those people stuck in traffic, easy targets. I was not going to lead it off the bridge, where I might gain my life at someone else's expense. I didn't know why I'd decided it was my job to keep them safe. But like Zack standing between the van and the troll, I'd accepted it and would do my best. The troll moved into my best target range. I took a step toward them, aimed, and shot the magazine of my gun empty as fast as I could pull the trigger. I didn't hit Adam. I was sure that most, if not all, of the shots had hit the troll. I've always been a good shot, and this past year I'd gotten serious about practicing. But the only shot that was important was the one that hit his left eye. I'd been aiming at his eye with all of my shots, but it was small, and he'd been moving. It brought him to a staggering halt. He brought one hand up to his face and hit Adam with the other, knocking him out of the air and into the cement barricade. I'd hit the troll and hurt him, but not enough to matter. I holstered the gun, and my foot landed awkwardly on the walking stick that should have been on my chest of drawers at home instead of the pavement in front of me. The walking stick had been made by Lou the Longarm, the warrior fae who'd been a combination of Superman and Hercules in the old songs and stories of the Celtic people. There were no stories I'd ever read about Lou, and I'd been reading as much about him as I could find since a walking stick had come back into my keeping, that had him fighting a troll. Lou was a Celtic deity, and trolls were more populous in continental Europe. Maybe the walking stick had come here to fight for the troll. It at least was fey, and I was not, though it had defended me against the fey before. I snatched it off the ground, because it was better than nothing. It was probably a coincidence that I remembered the essential oil that Zack had shoved into my pocket as soon as I touched the walking stick. I pulled it out of my pocket and saw at a glance that Zack had gotten it right, grabbed the Restwell and not any of the other oils that I'd bought. The Restwell had been mostly St. John's wort. While I was doing that, Adam rose to his feet, but he was clearly dazed. The troll growled at him, but when the troll went on the attack, he came after me. I wrenched the cap open. I was clueless how to use it. All that I knew about it was that placing the real plant around the windows and doors of a home was supposed to keep the fae out, like garlic is supposed to work for vampires. It didn't help that I remembered that garlic doesn't work on vampires, despite the stories. For lack of any better idea or any more time to fuss, I swept my hand out from left to right, scattering the liquid in front of me in a rough semicircle. Adam was running again and gaining on the troll, but the troll would reach me before Adam caught him. I dropped the bottle and prepared to be hurt. I held the walking stick as I'd have held a spear in class with my sensei, though the metal shod end had not changed, as it sometimes did, from decorative embellishment into a blade. A bad sign, I thought. But Adam's presence meant that I wasn't alone. For some suicidal reason, that left me in the Zen state that I only managed at the end of a very hard workout with Adam or Sensei Johansson. I narrowed my eyes at the troll and thought, bring it. The troll, so close I could feel his breath, stepped on the pavement where I dropped the essential oils and staggered back as if he'd hit a wall. Adam didn't wait for an engraved invitation. He leaped up the troll in almost the same way that Daryl had, except that when he reached the troll's shoulders, Adam extended his claws and brought his front feet, good shoulder and bad, together in a great swinging motion and dug deep into either side of the troll's head. The troll cried out and reached back, and just as he had with Daryl, he grabbed Adam and pulled. A sudden burst of pain ran down my shoulder from my mate bond, dropping me to the ground with the unexpected fury of it, as real or worse than if it had been my own pain, the mating bond abruptly opening up clear and full. I screamed with the pain and utter terror, because the pain I felt was Adam's and not my own. The terror drove me back to my feet, and I went after the troll with a fury that lit my bones with determination to stand between my mate and anything that hurt him. I whacked the troll behind the knee with a stick, but it didn't even flinch, so I hit him again harder with the narrow end, as though the walking stick were a foil and I wanted to stab him. The spear point did not form on the end of the stick, as it sometimes did, but apparently the silver-shod end was enough to hurt. The troll whined and turned his shoulders toward me, but Adam pulled the creature's head back where it had been. From the feel of the pain he shared with me, I knew Adam's shoulder had begun healing from the earlier damage the troll had done, but it was tearing again. Even so, a werewolf's claws are like those of a grizzly. The troll couldn't dislodge Adam. As the troll pulled, Adam's refusal to release his own grip meant that the troll was wrenching Adam apart. This wasn't the time to be squeamish. I hit the troll in one testicle with the butt end of the staff in the fencing stance I'd used before. As I did, there was a wet popping noise. I thought I'd done some damage, but there was no blood where I'd hit him. For a breathless second, I wondered if the troll had broken Adam. But it was the troll who screamed as he pulled Adam loose and ripped off a cap of moss hair, thick skin, and gray-green bone along with Adam. Then there was a lot of blood. The troll tossed Adam in a gore-dripping bloody mess over my head. I heard him hit the pavement, but I couldn't afford to look away. The troll was hurt, but not dead. Adam was unconscious, and I was the only thing standing between him and the troll. Though there was a gaping hole in his skull, the troll didn't seem to be appreciably disabled. I tightened my hold on the walking stick, my only weapon, and prepared to be annihilated. Something flew through the air, buzzing as it passed me, and buried itself in the newly opened section of the troll's skull. The troll's roar was so loud it hurt my ears. The projectile fell out of the troll's head and onto the pavement with a clang, revealing itself to be a 5-foot chunk of steel pipe, modified with a point on one end and crude fins on the other. The troll, eyes wild, bashed one fist into the cement barrier between the lanes in a berserker rage. He screamed as cement fell away from his fist in chunks, revealing the barrier's framework of rebar. He grabbed the rebar cage and jerked an entire section of cement free. I turned and sprinted, visions of a flying Miata in my head. Adam couldn't move out of the way. Adam lay unconscious on his side, blood darkening his fur and flattening it. I made it to him in 4 strides. Dropping the walking stick, I grabbed a handful of the fur over his hips and skin behind his neck. I'm strong for a woman, but no stronger than any human woman who worked out 4 times a week with a werewolf and a sadistic sensei. Adam as a werewolf weighs nearly double what I do. But I lifted him over my shoulders, staggered a step, then ran. I expected to see the police barricade, though the SWAT team and their body armor was new. Funny how I wouldn't risk aiming the troll at the police to save myself. But for Adam, I'd have thrown the whole lot of them to the troll, despite the genuine friendship I felt for some of them. But it wasn't just the police I saw. Running toward us was a very wet Daryl, who otherwise looked unharmed by his immersion in the river. He had one hand back in a classic javelin thrower's pose, another pipe weapon pulled back to throw. Keeping pace beside him with visible effort was a too thin, grim-faced Tad. He held another pipe in his hand, and I watched as he molded it with magic into a weapon that matched the one Daryl held. Daryl took a couple more racing strides and let the pipe javelin go. I couldn't tell what it did once it flew past me, but something hit the bridge and bounced the pavement under my feet, so I stumbled. Cement and broken rebar flew over Adam and me and bounced ahead of me. Evidently, the troll had thrown his chunk of cement barrier. I managed a couple of trying-to-get-my-balance steps before I lost that battle entirely. I landed hard on my knees, wobbled, then fell full length, chin first, when Adam's weight overbalanced me. Daryl grabbed the javelin Tad handed him and bolted past Adam and me. I let Adam go and rolled so I could see. The troll was down. The second pike javelin had struck truer than the first, and the top third of the troll had turned an unhealthy gray color. Daryl, javelin held high, skidded to a stop when Hoel, his whole body a bright flaming orange, leaped from the top of a car, over the cement divider, and landed on top of the troll. Daryl backed up until he was level with Tad, who had stopped next to me, as Howell attacked in a ferocious rage and a heat that I could feel from 20 feet away. The troll didn't move when Howell tore into it, gulping down the green and red flesh. The troll was unconscious or dead, I couldn't tell which, and it didn't matter for long. Its flesh melted where the Tibisena touched it, turning first black, then crumbling to gray ashes. The huge body was consumed by Hoel's heat in what could only have been a few minutes. The Tibisena continued to eat, even when there was no meat left. We didn't move, none of us. But still, Hoel looked up suddenly, his mouth full of ash. He glared at us, his eyes a hot, iridescent red. I stood up, using the walking stick, which was under my hand, though I'd left it a dozen yards away, for balance. I didn't like being on the ground with a predator so near. I cleared my throat. Hoel, I said. My voice sounded oddly wobbly to me, and I hoped no one else heard it. Hoel's lips curled back, displaying black teeth and a red, red tongue. The fringe of stone mane around his neck rippled as he shook his broad head in open threat, and it made a clattering noise, almost like wind chimes. He growled. Hoel, I said, reaching for Adam's power. Stop! I'd done this before. Called upon my mate's power of domination to make someone do something, or not do something. But this time, there was no surge of alpha magic in my words. There were a lot of possible reasons for the failure. The fact that I'd never tried it with Adam unconscious came right to mind. Maybe he was too wounded to fuel my voice. But the reason didn't matter, only the result. The Tibisena took a step forward. Some motion at the corner of my eye attracted my attention. I took a quick glance to my right and saw a kid, a boy maybe 10 years old, give or take a couple of years, climb over the cement barrier just a few yards from Hoel. I blinked, and it was still true. This stupid kid was dropping on the ground, his face calm, approaching Hoel as if he were a friendly dog instead of a slathering Tibisena with smoke and heat rising from his body in waves. "Stay back!" I shouted, starting forward. But a hand closed around my arm and pulled me back against a man's body. He only controlled that arm. So I twisted toward his hold, desperate to get free so I could stop the poor dumb kid who was about to die. When I turned, I saw it was Tad who held me back, his face thin, grim, and bruised. I only just stopped the instinctive hit that would have broken his ribs and set me loose. "Let me go," I snapped at him, but I kept my voice low. I didn't want to set the Tibisena off. I jerked to get free. But Tad held me as if I hadn't been practicing how to break this exact hold just last week. If I'd been willing to hurt him, I could have broken away, but I couldn't make myself do it. "Wait," he said. "Tad, Hoel isn't running this show," I hissed. "He's going to kill that boy." Hoel had quit looking at me at all. His attention was focused on the kid, who was dressed in sweats that were too large for him. They looked suspiciously like the sweats we kept tucked around in the cars of PAC and friends of PAC members. Hoel wouldn't survive if he killed a child. The thought decided me, and when I started struggling again, I went for blood. Tad grabbed my hand before I could hit him in the jaw, then pinned me in a lock I couldn't break, my back to his front.
"It's okay," he said. "This one isn't just a kid. Watch."
Hoel snarled at the boy, who ignored him, and touched the Tibisena's shoulder. Hoel, who was not Hoel, but the volcano demon who lived inside him, looked smug, probably waiting for fiery death to consume the boy the way it had the troll. Horrified, I waited for the same thing. We were both wrong. The skin of the boy's hand flushed red, and the color traveled through him, and he rocked back a little, then leaned his weight on his hand. Whatever he looked like, that was not a human boy. His hand hadn't burst into flame or blackened with third-degree burns. No human could have touched Hoel when he was running that hot without getting hurt. Tad released my arm with a pat. I took two steps so that I stood next to Adam's prone body, in case the Tibisena decided to do something rather than just stand under the boy's touch, because fire was only one of Hoel's weapons. The hot air on my face faded, replaced by river-cooled wind. Hoel staggered and collapsed. The curious, blackened stone exterior of the Tibisena lost the redness of heat and became entirely black.
"I told you it would be okay," Tad said.
"He's not hurting Hoel?" I asked anxiously.
"Hoel," he asked, "is that the name of the fire-breathing foo dog? I thought you killed it. How did you manage to take the volcano god's servant? I assume he's yours from the way he was fighting."
"Not a foo dog," I said tightly. "He's a Tibisena. They are very hard to kill, and when you do, they go out and invade the body of friends, like Hoel. But I made him pack."
The black stone surrounding the Tibisena cracked and fell away, leaving Hoel in his human body, pale, naked, and unconscious, face down on the roadway. The boy stepped back. When he met my eyes with his own, for a moment I could see that fire lived inside him. Then they were just ordinary hazel eyes.
"Did you hear that, Aiden?" Tad said. "The fire dog is a friend."
"Yes," said the boy. "I hear you. I heard when the big man who killed the troll told us both the same thing before we set foot on the bridge. I'm not an idiot. I need them. The man who bears the fire dog will come to no harm from this. I didn't kill anything, just bank the fire for a while."
The boy's accent wasn't so much a matter of pronunciation, but of cadence. English wasn't his first tongue. I took a good long breath and took stock. Daryl, the big man who had killed the troll, was a couple of yards away, in position to step in if the boy hadn't defanged the Tibisena. His hair still dripped water, but his various cuts and bruises from the fight had begun to fade.
"How did you get out of the river?" I asked.
I didn't move, because beside me Adam had awakened and was considering rolling to his feet. Where I was standing, my legs touching him, he could use me as an unobtrusive crutch. His pack was loyal. 2 years ago, Daryl might have put Adam down had he come upon him when he was injured like this. Adam's decision to court me had weakened the pack, and Daryl would have viewed himself as the better leader. Part of me didn't like seeing him so close to Adam when Adam couldn't defend himself, even though matters had changed. Daryl respected Adam, and had not so much as breathed the desire to move to the top of the food chain.
"I don't need protection from Daryl."
Adam's voice was clear in my head, though he made no effort to move.
"I think you've gotten caught up in the battle that is over now, sweetheart. But there are others watching. I'd just as soon wait until I'm sure I can walk before I try to get up."
We'd discovered that he had more control of the link between us than I did. The werewolf mating bond seemed a little confused by me. I'd grown to believe that the weird way the mating link seemed to function stronger sometimes than others was due to my partial immunity to magic, but this time I caught his words just fine. He was right about Daryl, and about the wound-up feeling in my stomach that tried to tell me that the battle wasn't over yet. I breathed in and tried to relax.
"One of the patrol boats fished me out,"
Daryl was saying, answering my earlier question.
"I got to shore and ran into Tad Z and that one."
He nodded toward the boy, who smiled, a wide, sweet smile that sent the warning hairs on the back of my neck straight up.
"The troll," said Z's voice heavily, "was sent after us. But someone forgot about trolls and bridges and the effect of running water on some forms of magic. Old Yarnfid might not have won in the lottery when they were passing brains out to trolls, but running water was his element, and trolls are difficult to control when they are in the same room with you."
I stayed where I was, 1 foot touching Adam, but turned to see my old friend. It was unlike him to have sent Tad into battle while he waited on the sidelines. Z wasn't looking at me, but at the ashes of the troll, which were blowing away in the river's breeze as he continued talking.
Or maybe they thought they were safe because trolls can't connect to most bridges now. Too many of the bridges today use too much steel. Maybe they, whoever they are, mistakenly assumed the troll would remain under their influence, despite the distance and the running water. Or maybe they intended to, accidentally, lose control and let loose one of the more violent trolls in history on the human population.
Beyond him, I saw a handful of pack members running up the arc of the bridge toward where we were standing. Down by the police barricade, Warren was talking to the police officers. I knew from his body language, and because I knew Warren, that he was keeping them back until we had our vulnerable protected and our dangerous people contained.
Hey, Ben?
Our English wolf looked at me, his clear blue eyes missing their usual ironic cast, and sprinted the rest of the way to us. Could you go check on Zack? I think the troll threw a car on him just over the crest of the bridge. He wasn't dead. I'd know if he were dead. But I was betting Zack was a long way from healthy.
Car? Ben said and glanced around. Fucking troll throwing fucking cars. What's the world coming to?
He pointed a finger at Scott and Sherwood, who'd followed his sprint.
You and you come with me. We're to rescue our Zacky boy, who might have gotten smashed by a fucking car.
Ben's swearing was usually a bit more creative. I had the feeling that he was a little overwhelmed. It didn't stop him from herding his chosen minions over the bridge. Ben had been climbing the pack hierarchy, not by battling his way up, but by not backing down. It was a subtler way to do it, more difficult in its way, but it was better for the pack and for Ben. Satisfied that Zack would be attended to, I turned my attention back to Z. You escaped from the reservation and they sent a troll after you? Z was wearing his usual appearance, a wiry old man with a small pot belly and a balding spot in the thin white hair on his head. Unlike Tad, he didn't look thinner or grimmer or anything. But Z wasn't half human, and his glamour could look any way he chose. He held himself stiffly, as if he hurt, which explained why it had been Tad transforming pipe for javelins and not Z. But the look in Z's eyes told me not to mention it.
"Tad told me you destroyed my shop," he said sourly.
I shrugged. "Wasn't me. It was pretty tough to keep up with things with just Tad and me anyway." He frowned at me suspiciously.
"You still owe me the money on it, even if it doesn't exist anymore."
The Fae are very particular about their bargains. "Insurance and Adam are rebuilding it," I told him, "and I've been making payments into your account the 10th of every month, which you would know if you only looked. I've never been more than a week late since I bought it from you."
"See that you aren't," he grunted.
"I love you" can be said in odd ways when you deal with very old Fae. I was satisfied, and I think he was too, because he quit paying attention to me. He frowned at Tad. It was the same expression he had on his face when someone brought a car into the shop before we figured out just what was wrong with it. He was, I thought, checking for damage. Finished, the old Fae glanced at Adam, who was still lying, apparently unconscious, next to me.
"Old man," said the boy Tad had called Aiden.
He'd been waiting with apparent patience while Z and I talked without moving away from Hoel. It wasn't quite a threat, but there was something deliberate about it. If it doesn't walk or talk like a 10-year-old despite appearances, I wasn't going to treat him like a 10-year-old if I could help it. He was dangerous. No one had gone to Hoel's aid, and I realized they were waiting for me to signal them. Was this boy, and I wasn't the only one who knew he wasn't wholly human, an enemy? Hoel breathed easily, but his body was lax.
"Old man," said the boy, "I'll have you do as you promised."
"This is Aiden the Fire-Touched Mercy," Z said neutrally. "I told him that your pack could likely make the Grey Lords back down for a day or two if you chose to."
"You should live up to your word," said the boy, his voice low and threatening.
Z's eyelids lowered.
You don't know as much as you think you do, he said. Boy.
Nope, I thought. If this boy was as young as he looked, I'd eat my hat. But he didn't smell like Fay. I was close enough, and the wind was